This week on Truth and Justice, we're continuing our jump back into season 5 with an interview that I recorded with Jason Baldwin in Austin, Texas in 2018. Today's episode will be the first half of that interview, and then next week you'll hear the second half. And once again, if you're new to the show and you just popped in to hear this interview with Jason Baldwin, I would highly recommend scrolling back through our episodes to season 5, where we produced over 60 episodes on the West Memphis 3 case. This would be a great time for anyone to catch up on season 5 before a TV series on the Oxygen Network airs, which should be happening soon. But whether you've listened to all of season 5 or not, what you're about to hear now is a really interesting, never-before-heard interview between myself and Jason Baldwin. Jason and I were chatting as we turned on the mics, so you're going to join in on the conversation as we're chatting about tattoos.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just Say You're Sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You were up at 4, baking pastries at 5, and open at 6. 100th cappuccino by 8, 200th customer by 9, and there's still 12 hours to go. That's why you need a business broadband that works as hard as you do. Introducing Sky Business. With 4G internet backup and our stay connected guarantee, that's better business. To find out more, visit skybusiness.com. Sky Fiber only, 30-second 4G activation or one-off credit. New customers, pro plus packs only. T's and C's apply.
Is the one in your hand?
Yeah, that's my one and only.
Is that a prison tat or is that a...
No. Well, in a way, it is a prison tat. I was grounded for 2 weeks for not running away with Damien when him and Deanna ran away.
Wait, tell that story.
Yes. Oh, man.
You got grounded for not running away.
Grounded for not running away, for being the good guy. Imagine that, always. So, Damien fell in love with this girl, Deanna, in high school. And high school romance, you know, full of passion. You know, they hold hands in class, in between class, carry each other. Well, Damien carried her books. This is before he quit school. Well, before he was forced out of school. And she lived, Damien and I, we lived in Lakeshore Trailer Park. She lived in Marion Doll houses, right? And this is kind of the rich side of neighborhood. Rich side of town and stuff and everything. They're well-to-do and stuff. And Lakeshore suffers a prejudice. Like when I was 11, everybody in Lakeshore got arrested for playing hide-and-go-seek. Sans Damien. Damien didn't live there.
Right.
So even though he didn't live there and suffer this conviction, he still would suffer the prejudice from it later on from Deanna's father.
Because
she's like, he's like, no, you're not dating anybody from
Lakeshore.
One of
those Lakeshore kids.
They've all got a record. They all have probation officers. You're not doing that, right? And so he's like, he can't come over here. I'm not taking you over there. It's over with. And so they would still see each other at school. Well, when he got word that they were still seeing each other at school, he put pressure on the principal and on the teachers to do everything in their power to keep them from seeing one another. And so like anything you put that much energy into, there's going to be an opposite effect to it. And so by him putting that much energy into keeping them apart, it made them want to be together that much more, right? And so instead of it being their togetherness being supervised and around parents and at the parents' home, now they have to come up with something extreme to see one another. And the only thing they could come up with was to run away to California and start a new life in sunny California together,
right.
Away
what,
from
16?
The oppression, right?
Yeah, they were 16 years old or so.
Exactly, you know, kids. And we were in the ninth grade. And so... Of course, the option to run away was on the table for me as well. You know, of course, being Damien's friend, I tried to talk him into not running away with Deanna. I'm like, dude, this is not good, you know. Surely y'all can, like, work it out. Things will get better, you know. Y'all be able to do whatever and stuff. But it just wasn't happening, you know. And so I gave him, like, $2. That was my
contribution
to the free Damien and Deanna fund, right? And
you were their Johnny Depp back then.
Yeah, I was their Johnny Depp. And so, you know, he got arrested and That's how he got a probation officer, Jerry Driver and everything. And so when he got arrested, I got grounded. My mom heard that Damien ran away with his girlfriend. And I knew, of course, Damien's mom knew too, you know, and, but anyway, I tried to talk him out of it. I could have went. I didn't go, but I ended up getting grounded, which 2 weeks grounding was way better than him going to training school and mental health facilities and things. Cause not only when they arrested him, you know, it broke his heart because he's madly in love with this girl. They're being pulled apart and then they turned her against him, you know, and he ended up getting in trouble with the law where she didn't. Right. And things like that. So it broke his heart and everything. And he went through all that mental anguish of suffering that. And so that is really the catalyst of all this. That breaking of him right there, that heartbreak is what got him in the mental health and in the mental health institutions and all that stuff that Jerry Driver hates him for.
Right.
You know,
so. Well, it seemed to me when I've actually studied a lot of those documents that a lot of that Jerry Driver manufactured, you know, it was a lot of what I do is to, you know, sort through the fact and fiction, right? In what's, you know, so, well, you know, in Damien's, you know, mental health reports, it says, for example, that he and Dominie had plans to sacrifice their firstborn child.
Which is not true.
Right. Yeah. Not true is putting it mildly.
Right.
Well, but it says that in his file, and then people say, well, it's in his record. But then when you read the record, it says, you know, in the hospital he was in, that Jerry Driver called the hospital and told them that.
Exactly.
And Damien denied it. And then they talked to Dominie, and Dominie's statement is, apparently I found out Damien had a plan to sacrifice our child. Well, who did she hear that from?
Jerry Driver.
Jerry Driver.
And I know Dominie. I haven't talked to her since we got arrested, which I should. I'd like to see how she's doing. But she was probably like, not that she believed Damien had the plan.
Yeah.
It's that these people are proffering this.
Yeah.
You know.
And you can read the sarcasm in the note where she says, apparently.
Apparently. Yeah. The sarcasm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we find out. But there's tons of stuff through there. So let's talk about, let's start there as we could. We'll try to walk through this.
So what's it like to have, everybody in America doesn't have their life dictated by people who do not have their best interest at heart.
Right? Right.
So that's what you have in Marion right there. You have a person who has a control over a person's life, but they don't have that person's life. They don't have them at their best interest. They don't have, like Jerry Driver did not have Damien's best interest at heart. Even though he had complete and utter control over Damien's life.
Mm-hmm.
And he put fiction designed to destroy Damien and his life in his file. And now for everyone that can go and open up his file and look at all this mad fiction and take it as fact and attribute it to Damien and use that as an excuse to find him guilty of a crime he did not commit. To say, you know what? You deserve to be found guilty for something you didn't do because of the way you acted before. When all those actions were created by someone who wanted to see Damien's life ruined.
Did you know Jerry Driver very well?
I've never talked to him. I've never met him. My probation officer was Steve Jones.
Uh-huh.
And Steve Jones treated me with respect. And I treated him with respect. And we treated one another with respect. But Damien didn't have that same relationship with Jerry Driver.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
do you have any idea, or has Damien ever told you why he thinks? I've never been able to understand why did Jerry Driver have it out for him so bad? Because it's obvious that he did by the paperwork dictates that.
Right. I would just say it was a personal disliking of everything that was Damien.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing Damien practiced or looked into different religions. At one time, he looked into being a Catholic. At one time, he was looking into Wicca. And so, in the South, at this time, anybody that looks at any other religion, even if you're looking at it like educationally and scholastically, is a no-no. It's like, mm-hmm. you could be burned at the stake for it.
Right. How long were you and Damien friends?
I first met Damien and I was in seventh grade study hall.
Okay.
And I think he was in eighth grade at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wrestling on my last day of school for the 10th grade. So that was
about 3 years.
Yeah.
So you guys were, did you guys spend a lot of time together during those 3 years?
When he lived in Lakeshore Trailer Park before him and Deanna ran away,
mm-hmm.
pretty much all the time because he lived in the next street over.
Mm-hmm.
Like I lived on Westlake Drive South. He lived on Southwest Lake Drive. These streets are harder names to remember because it's like the opposite of one another.
And it's hard now directional they, names. The streets are all in the same place, but they all change names. So I had a hard time finding where you lived when I was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, sorry about that.
Yeah.
But so we spent a lot of time together when he lived on the street over. But after he ran away and he was arrested and he went to training school and everything, his mom and sister and everybody moved to Portland. And then when he got out, he went to Portland, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see him again. And then the summer that he ran away during the ninth grade, when I was in the ninth grade. And then the summer in between the ninth and 10th grade, he got out and came back briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it wasn't even summer. 10th grade had actually started because he tried to enroll in school.
Mm-hmm.
And since it was the same school Deanna was going to, Jerry Driver made a fit about it and said that there was a they couldn't be around one another,
uh-huh.
and got Damien locked back up for trying to enroll back in the school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's why when I got to 10th grade and then when Damien got back out, he was like, I'm not trying to go back to school. I'm just going to go get my GED.
Okay.
Right. And so he went and got his GED and I stayed in school. So that's why on May the 5th, when I got out of school, he wasn't in school. He was sitting in my yard on the Yugo, him and Dominique.
Waiting for you to get home.
Waiting on me to get home. Yeah.
Well, so how much time was there prior to the murders of Stevie, Chris, and Michael? How much time going back from there were you able to spend with Damien once he was back and he was, you know, available for you to hang out with and be friends with again after being out of the hospital?
You know, he hadn't been back in town but a few months. It wasn't long.
Okay.
And it wasn't the same as before when he lived just down the street. Because when he just lived down the street, I could just tell my mom I'm going down the street to Damien's.
Okay.
But when he moved to Broadway, I had to tell my mom I'm going to Damien's. But she has to take me there. Or I have to call over there and he has to get his mom to come get me.
Right.
And take me there. So it's a big production.
Right.
Right. So now parents have to be involved. Parents have to take you to and fro.
Because that's quite like a distance from the Broadway trailer park to Lakeshore.
Oh, yeah.
Did he ever walk from there to your house? Or
not that I know of.
Because I've never looked at it, but it's got to be several miles.
I've never walked it.
Okay. Do you know if he ever walked it?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I can't remember a single time where I can remember he was at my house and he was like, dude, that was a freaking long ass walk. Or
right. <you know? laughs> Yeah, you know, I imagine that's exactly what he'd be saying.
I can't remember any of those times, anything like that. So I don't think he ever walked from his house there to my house.
Okay. So did you guys, during those few months leading up to, I mean, somehow you got tied in with Damien this whole thing.
I mean, he was my best friend from high school, you know.
So did you guys still spend a lot of time with each other then?
Like I said, even though I couldn't just walk over to his house anymore. Mm-hmm. We still would like, the skating rink. We'd meet at the skating rink. I'd have my mom take me there and his mom would take me there. Or our parents would take us both there. He'd stay the night at my house or I'd stay the night at his house, you know, and we'd go to the skating rink.
So you guys were still tight during that time.
Yeah, we're still friends. I just can't walk over in 5 minutes.
See him every single
house,
day, right?
Know? Yeah. It's gotta be planned for the weekend or whatever. You know, it's gotta be a big thing. But Dominique lived in Lakeshore, and a lot of times, Damon would just stay over there, too. Stay the night over there, you know? So, like, he could come over to my house or whatever.
Okay.
You know?
So he was around quite a bit then?
Yeah. He was around a bit, but just not like it used to be when he lived down the street if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But even though Dominique lived around the corner from me and he was over there a lot, he still didn't live there.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
So there was still some times where I'd be, you know, like, I'm wondering what Damien, I'm going to go over Damien's. No, I can't do that because Damien doesn't live over there.
Right.
He lives way the heck in Broadway, trailer park. So now if I want to go see Damien, I got to call. Hey, dude, what you got going on?
It's actually a different town because you guys actually...
It's in West Memphis. I live in Marion.
Right. Different town. So during the years that you guys were close, you mentioned the different, because one of the big things that people, you know, Damien's a Satanist and all these things. In your opinion, did Damien worship Satan?
No. In my opinion, Damien didn't worship anything, you know, and he definitely didn't worship Satan. He was curious about religion, you know, he was curious about life and curious about everything. You know, he just loved to study about things, you know. Me personally, I'm a Christian, I'm raised a Baptist, and I'm an American, and I believe that everybody has a freedom of religion and a right to practice religion, right to study religion. And as long as your religion isn't hurting me, I'm for it.
Right.
You know, if you are not hurting me, I am for it. If you're not trying to make me do something I don't want to do, I am for it. Mm-hmm. If it frees you, I am for it. Right? But a lot of people aren't that away. You know, I mean, I was raised a Baptist, you know, and as a Baptist, you're taught, you know, if you don't believe in this path, it's the only way to salvation, you're damned to hell.
Right.
You know? And so a lot of people take that very seriously. And they go about it in a way I wouldn't go about it, right? I would look at people, if I'm really believing that person's going to go to hell, I'm going to try to help them not go to hell instead of being like, oh, you're going to go to hell. Damn you.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And just to throw kerosene on the fire, so to speak, right? That doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
You know? Why do you want to build a wall in between you and these people that you're supposed to be helping?
Exactly. And Damien seemed to be, I mean, Damien obviously had his own beliefs, still does.
Yeah.
But I've never heard him say a negative word about anybody else's beliefs.
No. And you will not ever hear him say a negative word about anybody else's beliefs because he believes that you have a right to believe what you need to believe.
Right.
You know?
Did he ever strike you as growing up or anything as being violent?
Mm-mm. Now, we wrestled around in like our earlier years, wrestled around and stuff like that, but it wasn't violent. It was just kids
goofing around,
wrestling around. Like, we'd be wrestling each other, throwing each other headlocks. He took taekwondo. So he'd put me on these weird moves and stuff, and I'd try to get loose or whatever. I don't know. It's funny to talk about it now, but then it just seemed natural.
Yeah.
I mean, me and my little brothers are always wrestled around. I don't know if you had brothers or
whatever, yeah, I got two
best friends. So
yeah, there's still holes in the walls at the rough household from three big boys growing up together.
We didn't have a camera when I was a kid, but one day my dad, like my biological father, showed up and he brought a camera and he took pictures of us, me and my brothers. And there's a picture of my little brother, Matt, who's 2 years younger than me, and he's got me in a headlock.
Did he grow up to be bigger than you?
He is bigger than me.
Yeah.
But I think I was starved in the county jail during my growth stage.
Uh-huh.
And I missed out on some of my growth because, like, my dad's like, he's taller than me. He's like, I always thought you were going to be tall.
Yep.
I'm like, yeah, they starved me in the county jail.
How old were you when you were in the county jail?
Well, on my 16th birthday, I had it right before I went to the county jail. And I remember I was just reaching the same height with my mom because I was like, Mom, I'm almost as tall as you now.
Yeah.
Right? At 16. Right? And then the visits in the county jail were through glass. Mm-hmm. And so you couldn't really tell how tall you were.
Right.
And they would always already be there. But later when I got to prison and I was able to hug my mom for the first time, she walked up. And I was like, oh, my God, you got so short because she came to, like, my chest.
Yeah.
Right? So within a year, I grew that much.
I forget, like, when you said when I was 16 in the county jail, I forget that's when you were arrested for this murder. I keep forgetting that you were such a young kid when this happened. Because you had a little bit of run under the law. Was that what we were referring to earlier?
I went to Memphis schools until the fifth grade and then came home from school. Well, I said school for the fifth grade, and there were U-Haul trucks outside my house, and my grandparents were out there. And while my stepdad was at work, we moved to Arkansas, right? And so my first day of school in the sixth grade, is in Marion is when I first met Jesse.
Okay.
And he was like trying to bully me. He was like the school bully. And he came and tried to punch me, and like I ducked it.
Yeah.
He chased me around the playground, and this girl, Donna Spurlock, was like, "Hey, Jesse, stop chasing him," and got him and like made him promise her to not chase me around the playground.
Yeah.
And beat me up because I was a new kid.
Right.
But what was your question again? I'm so sorry. What was your question again? I'm so sorry.
When you got put on probation.
Oh, yeah. So I'm 11 years old. We just moved from Memphis, Tennessee to Arkansas. And like we get there at the trailer park and it's, you know, we're trying to make friends and fit in. Me and my brother, Matt, I was 11. Matthew was 9. Little Terry was, so he's 7 years older than me. So he's like 4 or 5 then, you know. And so we're trying to make friends with everybody. Of course, we live on a lake. There's plenty of fishing at summertime. There's soybean and cotton fields. So we play hide and go seek out there. And then out in the middle of the soybean field is this old storage shed, right? Made out of tin. And I don't know how long it'd been there. I mean, no one told me, but everybody was like, this is what we do. We play hide and go seek in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how long it takes a tree to grow, right? Uh-huh. But a tree had started growing outside of the building. But at some point, the tree got so big and so tall as it was growing that it pushed the wall in and it lifted the roof.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
That's how long this place is. I mean, it's abandoned.
Right.
Right? So we climb the tree, go in the roof, and then climb down the tree.
Uh-huh.
Because the tree is inside now. It like pushed the wall open. It grew.
Okay.
Right? That's how long, I don't know how long this process was, right? And so all summer, we made friends that summer with everybody and played and swam and just had a blast. And then one day, freaking police show up and they caught all of us. I mean, it was probably every kid in the trailer park.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the youngest was like 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest was like maybe 13. And just took every kid in the trailer park and gave them a criminal charge, criminal trespassing, breaking and entering. And then to top it off, they said we destroyed property. If anything in there had been destroyed by anything, it was destroyed by time, neglect, and the elements, not by any kids.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were just in there having a good time, playing hide and go seek. I remember I was pretending there was like these car shells of cars. I pretended mine was like an X-Wing TIE fighter or something.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're just playing, you know?
Yeah.
And so I remember my public defender, Mr. Montgomery, told me, he says, this is nothing. Y'all are just playing hide and go seek. Don't worry about it. And he gave me a New Testament, gave my little brother Matthew a New Testament. And so he assured us that this is going to be taken care of and it'll be all okay, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so we go to court, right? And the prosecutor, John Fogelman,
you're kidding, same prosecutor?
Prosecutor John Fogelman has all these kids, these children, ranges from 9 to 13. I'm 11. My brother Matthew is 9, right?
Uh-huh.
Other kids. And his solution for these kids is to send us all to training school, kids' prison.
Mm-hmm.
He says, Your Honor, I think 2 years in the state reform school would do all these kids some good. My public defender, Mr. Montgomery, stood up and says, Your Honor, I agree. The same guy who had been telling us this is all BS and don't worry about it, says, Your Honor, I agree. 2 years in the reform school. My mom jumped up and says, Your Honor, my kids aren't going to prison. And so they all went to the bench.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Montgomery, Mr. Fogelman, and my mom. When they came back, I had 5 years probation and a $500 fine.
On all that for playing hide and go seek.
Playing hide and go seek.
At 11 years old.
My brother Matthew had 5 years probation and a $500 fine. There were some families that had 4 kids playing hide and go seek in there. 500, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000. I remember our Christmas budget for me, Matthew, Terry, my mom was $100. That wiped out 5 Christmases right there.
Mm-hmm.
Just on mine. Mine, right. And Matt's, that's 10 Christmases.
For a game of hide and seek.
Hide and seek. And so that's my criminal history. Of course, I would do something later on that I really knew was wrong, and I got caught and got in trouble for it, and that was shoplifting. Some M&M's and potato chips from Walgreens.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was thinking.
Wanted some M&M's and potato chips.
Yes.
Sounds like what you were thinking.
But that's my criminal history. Damien's okay. Criminal history. He fell in love with a girl, and her parents wouldn't allow them to be together, so they ran away.
And so that was your guys' past. And that all leads up to, I kind of want to walk through chronologically your part in the investigation. So on May 5th, which was a Wednesday night, 1993, is when the three boys go missing. The next day is a Thursday, May 6th. Their bodies are found. When was your first contact with police after that?
It would be Friday.
The 7th?
Yes.
Okay.
They're at my house.
So how did they get to your house the day after the bodies were found? Like, do you know what led them to you?
You know, at the time, I didn't even question it because I was thinking they probably got a list of everybody in the entire county that has a criminal record, mm-hmm. right? My name is going to automatically be on this list.
Right.
It's been on this list since I was 11 years old.
Right.
Right? I've been dealing with being on lists.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm thinking that the police are just doing their job.
Right.
I'm not thinking that they're fixing to try to set me up for something I didn't do. You know?
So they just.
Because since I was 11 until 16, I've been dealing with Steve Jones, my probation officer, and he's been fair with me, been nice to me, and been courteous, you know, just been real and fair, not anything underhanded that entire time. So I didn't suspect anything underhanded from them, you know.
Mm-hmm. So did they just show up at your house on Friday?
Exactly.
Do you remember what was it, daytime, evening time?
Oh, it was the daytime. I'm at the house. It's me, Damien, Dominique, Matthew is there, Terry is there, because we can't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We got to stay at the house until they find who committed the crimes, because when the boys' bodies were found Thursday, my mom didn't go to work. She stayed home from work. And it was like, hey, you know, my little brother, Terry, was 9, same age as the boys. You know,
right.
Little guy. And so I know my mom, she's probably sitting there seeing him, like that could happen to him, mm-hmm. you know. And she's probably thinking it could have happened to me, Matt, and Terry, mm-hmm. you know. And for me, I'm sitting there thinking it probably could have happened to Terry, you know. And so I understand my mom when she's saying, hey, keep everybody at home. Y'all stay at home until they find who did this, you know, and everything.
So that was your mom's rule?
That's my mom's rule.
Because she was scared.
Whoever did this might do it to one of y'all. So we're not leaving the house, you know. Okay. We're staying at home, you know. And so they came to the door and knocked on the door and called us out. And we went out.
Who, do you remember which officers it was?
I remember what they look like. I can't tell you which ones, but I want to say it was Ridge, but I do know one of them was wearing a black shirt with a Grim Reaper around it, insignia on it. Because I was sitting there thinking, oh, wow, pretty interesting shirt.
Yeah, for a cop.
I mean.
So we're roughly about 24 hours after the boys were found, and they're already at your house. Mm-hmm. And how did that, and Damien happened to be at your house.
Yeah.
And so what happened there? What did they do?
Well, they started questioning us, and about that time, my mom showed up and mm-hmm. came back, was like, hey, y'all don't be questioning my kid out here, or whatever it was mm-hmm. she said to him. She, like, flew off at him, like, y'all get out of my yard, and mm-hmm. I'm like, mom, it's all right. They're just trying to figure out stuff that happened. She's like, oh, no.
So what was that questioning like? Because I know you could see exactly what you just described in the police file, that she told them they're done, and they were done.
I remember. In fact, now that I'm recalling this, I think it was Ridge solidified because he testified at trial
mm-hmm.
that Damien gave him information that only the killer would know. But I was standing there when Ridge was asking him questions. It wasn't like asking Damien for information that Damien knew. He was like, he would like put the answer in the question. Do you think it was possible that one of them may have been wounded more than the other? And Damien was like, I don't know. And Ridge was like, do you think it was possible? I'm asking you to just say if it was possible or not. Right. And Damien's like, I guess it's possible.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Were they
and so when these are the way the questions went for Damien, he's asking him to guess if these things are possible or whatever, right? But when Ridge was reviewing his notes and testimony at his trial, he's saying that Damien said these things matter-of-factly. Like right. Damien offered this information up to him when that wasn't the case.
Well, in fact, I don't know. Are you aware of the fact that the questions they were asking were from a 32-question questionnaire? They asked everybody the exact same
questions. I learned that from listening to your podcast.
Oh, so you didn't know that before that?
No.
And so when I was going through those questions, did those sound familiar to you as far as what they were asking you guys that day?
Oh, yes. Yes, but I don't know if they like completed the whole questionnaire before my mom showed up, though.
So on the actual questionnaire is in the police file.
Okay.
And they have your name, and I thought you guys filled them out, but he was writing.
Yes.
So that's his handwriting. So it's got a column, and I'll show it to you, that says Damien and Jesse, 1, 2, 3, all the 32. And it's
Damien and Jesse or Damien and Jason?
Excuse me, Damien and Jason. Yeah, yeah. But it says Damien, no. Jason, no. Damien, I don't know. Jason, I don't know. You know, whatever. So it's back and forth. And you see, it completes the column for Damien, and then it gets about 5 questions from the end on Jason and stops. And then there's a note in the police file that says, Jason's mom came home and kicked us off her property, so we didn't get to finish the questionnaire.
Go, mom.
Yeah, right. But yeah, it's just a bunch of, they don't, you know, I have a copy of the actual questionnaire. But that form in the file is just 1 through 32, and then a Damien column and Jason column.
They were questioning him first. I was standing there, and then they started questioning me. So that's how they got
almost done.
Yeah.
Okay.
That explains the answers on his side, and then the beginning of answers on my side.
Okay. And yeah, so, but you were.
So we were out there for a little while. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how long precisely. If I would guess 30 minutes, it could have been 45. If I'd guess 45, it might have been 30. I don't know.
Right.
It was a while, you know.
So they come up to you, like, do you remember, like, how did they present that? Were they like, hey, we think you're suspects in this homicide?
No. They say, hey, we're going around asking people questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how they put it, without having to be on the stand to say this is what they said verbatim.
Right.
But, I mean, I didn't feel threatened or anything like that, you know.
The time didn't think anything up.
I honestly just thought they just had to go mark all their P's and Q's, dot all their I's and cross all their T's. You know, I just thought maybe they had a list of everybody convicted of a felony, everybody that had a record and had to ask, like somebody gave them the command, you go ask everybody on this list these questions, right?
So at that time, did they ask you your whereabouts that night?
At that time, I can't recall if they got to that with me or not now. Do you know? You might have better recollection reading their notes.
I don't. It's not in there. So I'm assuming they didn't. And that's why I was wondering if they had, and they just didn't put in the note. So they just went through the questionnaire, stopped, and left. Then when was your... Because I know Damien... At several times he was talked to by the police.
Yeah, they went to his house, and I can't tell you the order of operations on this of when he went, when they went to his house and when they took him to the police station, or if he went to the police station, like if they like called him and said, come to the police station, or if they like went to his house and brought him to the police station. Cause I know he was questioned at the police station, but I can't recall how he got to the police station to be questioned. Do you know?
No, and I mean, I do, but it's in another file.
Yeah, I mean, I just haven't even thought of that, really.
Did you? So, but in the point I guess I'm going to is, so Damien had all this contact with the police between there that they were constantly harassing him.
Yeah.
Did you have any more contact with police whatsoever?
No more. Not until we were arrested at Damien's house on
June 3rd,
1993. My last day of school for 10th grade that night.
Okay.
And we're just sitting there watching stupid B flicks and...
And the police came knocking on the door.
Yeah. Well, they'd been harassing Damien and messing with him and stuff. So Damien's mom and dad, Pam and Joe, told us, they're like, hey, if they come to the house knocking on the door, You don't have to answer to them. You mm-hmm. don't have to answer any questions. You don't have to go through that. So just pretend like you're not even here, you know, okay. and enjoy your night.
So that was the advice they had given you guys?
We're going to go enjoy our night. Uh-huh. You enjoy your night.
Right.
Jason, it's your last day of school. Uh-huh. Enjoy that. Like, they rented movies. Like, they wanted us to enjoy ourselves, you know?
Right.
They didn't want us to be harassed by the police.
Right.
You know? So they're like, this is their advice.
And they did show up, but this time they had arrest warrants with them.
Exactly.
You're obviously, and I know you don't know all the details or timeline, it doesn't matter, but were you starting to get a read from Damien, from his interaction, from what he's telling you, during that month that they were starting to really look at you guys for this crime?
What I got from him was more anger than fear. Like, these dudes are just keep harassing me, keep messing with me, and he was laying it at the feet of Jerry Driver. By this time, I kind of got accustomed. I don't want to say I got used to yeah. hearing Damien complain about the police.
Right.
But I kind of did. And that doesn't say anything about Damien, really. It says something about the police, right?
Yeah.
At the time, in my immaturity, I kind of blamed Damien. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why is this dude always complaining about these police? I don't want to hear about this.
Right.
You know? Let's talk about music or whatever, you mm-hmm. know? But now that I've matured and grown up a little bit, I'm like, why? The question shouldn't be, why is Damien complaining about the police? The question should be, why is these police always harassing Damien? That
right.
should be my question to myself, you know, during those years, at those times when I was less than an ideal friend to Damien, less than patient with him when he's getting things off his chest that he's going through in his life. You
right.
know?
So it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, but the last thing in your mind was, they're going to arrest us for these murders.
It was a complete shock.
And also, you knew they were harassing Damien about it. Did you have any indication that you were part of that too? Or did you think they were just looking at Damien?
I don't think I thought of it like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I thought that they would ever arrest Damien or me. I thought that they would actually find who committed the crime and arrest them. Did I think that Damien would stop being harassed by the police once they figured out who did this crime? No, because before that crime happened, Damien was being harassed by the police.
Constantly.
And he was complaining about it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting tired of him complaining about it. As a friend, I'm just
right.
got tired of hearing about it. And to be real, it got on my nerves,
mm-hmm.
right? But at the same time, it wasn't like I was a guilty murderer worried about the police finding me out. No, I'm just a kid who's doing my best to get through school and life, who has a best friend, who has a lot of issues that gets on my nerves.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And actually, when you put it in that perspective, it makes a lot more sense as far as where your mind was, like, the police are harassing your friend. Do you think they're going to arrest him? You forget about the fact that the police have been harassing Damien for years. Leading up to that.
Right.
So it was, I'm sure it was just same old news when Damien's complaining about the police harassing him.
Right.
So they come knock on Damien's door.
Well, before they knocked, they came in the driveway and Michelle, Damien's sister, mm-hmm. was like, oh my God, the police are in the driveway. And so she started turning the lights out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh crap. Like, I remember what Pam and Joe said. We just pretend like we're not there.
Right.
So we all run to the back bedroom and mm-hmm. turn the TV off and lights off. And they're like not going to go away.
They weren't having it.
They weren't having it. No, it wasn't like we're just going to knock and ask you some questions and ruin your evening and go away. No, we're going to really ruin your evening and all of your evenings.
Right.
Yeah.
Like walk me through that experience. And I'm sure it's maybe a cliche question that's been asked a million times, but like, what were you going through mentally, emotionally when they come in? It sounds like it's the last thing in the world you were expecting to happen. And they come in and tell you you're under arrest.
Well, it was when you're in it at that moment, there's very little room for thought because there's a lot happening. There's a mm-hmm. lot of commands being given that you have to obey right then, mm-hmm. right? They tell you. They don't ask you. They tell you. You're Jason Baldwin. I don't have time to think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir, is what I answer.
Yeah.
Sit right there. I don't have time to think. Do I not sit there?
Right.
No, I sit right there,
mm-hmm.
you know? So a lot of that evening was just that. Like, I don't really I didn't have an opportunity to really get my feet under me to think. So I'm just like constantly being pushed and pulled, and I'm not in a comfortable situation. I'm not right. in control of even my own thoughts at this point because I'm having to respond to them. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so I remember I did have a surge of like emotion at one point for Michelle of like, oh my God, she is so brave because she at one point asked the officer, like, I'm going to need your name and badge number, sir. When he was like ordering us around, like Michelle, she's younger than I am.
Right.
And she was like calm enough to ask this and strong enough
yeah.
to ask this officer to give her his badge number and name. Because she's going to document this mistreatment that we're suffering, right?
Right.
And so that's one of the things I remember from that is like a peak of like pride in her. You know, like, if that makes sense, you know, like,
yeah.
oh, wow, go Michelle, you know?
Right.
That's one of the things, a thought that I had of my own in essence, you know? And the rest of it, I'm just reacting to what they're doing to me. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm giving them answers to questions that they're asking. So they put me in the cop car, of course, and, you know, at one point they actually tell me I'm under arrest. They said, Jason Baldwin, you're under arrest for murder. And at Damien's house, in front of Michelle, you know, and Dominique and stuff. And I can't say that I could feel anything right then. It was like I was in shock.
Mm-hmm.
Like the words that he was saying is kind of like far away, like in a distant hallway, you know, and just echoes of it reaching me. Like I'm kind of in slow motion in essence, you know, and it's just like really hard for me to move or anything. I guess I was in shock and overwhelmed, right? But I did my best to answer any and every question they gave me, right? So they arrest me, we go in the cop car. And first they take me to the West Memphis jail, right? And I'm in my own clothes at this point. Metallica shirt, right? And stuff. Chicago Bulls hat. Jeans. I'm not wearing my shoes because we're in the house because the yard is muddy. You don't want to track mud in the house, right?
Remind me to circle back to the muddy yard.
All right. So everyone leaves their shoes at the door. You don't want to track mud in the house. So, but they take me out and take me to the police department. And they take me back and forth between the West Memphis jail and the Marion jail a couple of different times over the night. So I go to West Memphis jail. Then I go to the Marion jail. And it's in the Marion jail that they take my earring and my necklace. Right. And then they take me back to the West Memphis jail. Right. And they put me in this long hallway. Right. It's just a hallway. And then there's another hallway on one end and another hallway on this end, but it's got crash gates in the middle. When they get me there, they strip me. They're like, we're going to need that shirt. We're going to need your pants. And they leave me in this hallway completely naked. I mean, underwear and all. And I don't know, maybe 5 minutes went by before on the other ends, people. We're walking back and forth. And when I say people, I mean inmates, like people in the jail.
And you're standing there
and
naked.
they were like, that's the one. That's the one right there. That's the one, like saying that's the guy that they arrested for the murders of the kids. And like, I'm completely naked. I'm a kid myself.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And like, they are just saying horrible things of what the person who killed those kids deserved to happen to them. But I didn't do it. But they don't know I didn't do it. But they're saying these things need to happen to me. All these whatever horrible things they can imagine. You know, the worst things in the world you can imagine. Right? And so I go through that for I don't know how long. And then the police come and they give me...
Let me hold you up for just a second because I want to... What you just said. So they put you in the this open hallway.
Open hallway.
Naked, standing
naked.
There. And then inmates start... Traveling past, and then
well, there's a like bars,
right?
A crash gate and a crash gate, but like if you imagine a capital I, I'm in this hallway, and people are walking back and forth in this hallway and this hallway, right? But It's not a door in between the hallways. It's bars. So they can't go in there and I can't go out.
But they can all see you.
Oh, they can look, and words have so much power.
Were they, I guess what I'm getting at, were they look like in their normal course of business, or were they paraded past there?
That I don't know.
Because the other question.
I'm blind.
Uh-huh.
Like, I can see because I got glasses on.
Uh-huh.
And now you're just a shape.
Right.
Right. I can tell that you're a male, and I can tell that you're white.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can tell. I can tell you have dirt clothing. Right. Mm-hmm. And so those guys, I couldn't tell. And I didn't know anything about jails or anything then to know if like they were being paraded to see me, or if that was their normal operations or what. But all I know is there were a bunch of people walking past on either side. So I couldn't like cover up and hide this way or cover up and hide this way. So I just had to like kind of go up against the wall and cover myself.
And they're and they're all yelling that you're the one that killed those boys.
Exactly. So the news is out. The word is that
and
out.
That's what I'm getting at. They just arrested you. They just took you there. And what I'm wondering is, was this a tactic by the police to put you in a position? Were they threatening you and what they're going to do to you, or what?
Oh,
they
yeah. Like, they're what people do when they see someone who is a suspect of a horrible crime is they make up the things that person deserves to happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Happens everywhere. People do it all the time. They're sitting in front of the news. Someone gets arrested for being a suspect in something to a child. Oh, they should do the same thing to that person.
Mm-hmm.
So by then, there'd been a month of rumors, all of this stuff, of whatever right. happened to those boys and stuff. So all of this was unleashed on me mm-hmm. at that point, you know, by all these people. And there I am. I'm buck naked.
Right.
In the most vulnerable way you could be, you know.
It just to me.
So it was very emotional, very demoralizing. It kind of gave a glimpse of a life and a future
mm-hmm.
that I could look forward to experiencing for a better terms.
And that's exactly what I'm getting at, because I could see a very sharp interrogator setting that situation up and then later getting you into an interrogation room and giving you the whole...
You know what they're going
to
do to you.
What you saw out there is what you can expect, but you work with us and we can help you with that.
Right.
Type of thing. Did they make things like that to you when you were being interviewed?
I think had they have not had Jesse's statement, they'd have put more pressure on me than mm-hmm. what they did. But they put a lot of pressure on me, not to say that they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kept telling them where I was at, what I was doing, and it was not murdering three kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they just refused it, absolutely refused it. And they would just tell me, well, your friend says otherwise. I'm like, who is this friend that you keep referring to? And they were like, oh, you know, you tell us. And I'm not going to play guessing games with them people. I'm not going to guess.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. And I thought, honestly, the thought crossed my mind that maybe whoever this person was completely made up.
And they were actually referring to Jesse.
Now I know they were referring to Jesse. At the time, I didn't know they were referring to Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted me to give them a name.
Uh-huh.
I had no names to give them. But then they were like, why don't you guess? Who do you think would, why would someone lie on you like this? Why would someone say you committed this crime? Who do you think would tell us you did this? And I was like, I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, there's got to be someone. Give us a name. And that's the way they questioned me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Were you questioned for a long time?
The time of that night dragged on for so long. Like, I did not sleep
mm-hmm.
at all that night. And I went back and forth between the West Memphis Jail, the Marion Jail, and the Crittenden County Memorial Hospital,
mm-hmm.
like several different times. So I don't know actually how long they questioned me. Like, was it 45 minutes? Was it an hour?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know now.
In their questioning, they obviously asked you where you were that night.
Right.
Did you have a pretty good recollection of where you were on the night of May 5th?
Yes. And when I tried to tell them, they were like, no, your friend has told us different.
So what would do you remember now what your alibi was?
Oh, yeah. When I got home from school. like, I went to school that day. You know, I went to school. I believe in education. Education is important to me. So I went to school. When I got home from school, when I got off the bus, Damien and Dominique were already at my house, sitting on, like, in front of my house, I have a Yugo, which is this terrible little car that's, this car in particular, this specific car is wrecked. Like, my mom wrecked it. And she's like, she wrecked it before I turned 16. Then she was like, when you turn 16, you can get this car. I'm like, that car is wrecked. I don't want that car. And so when I did turn 16, like, the car was technically mine, even though it could not and would not. It was not a Yugo. It was a Can't-Go.
Right.
Right. And, but anyway, sorry. Damien and Dominique were sitting on the Yugo when I got home from school waiting on me and stuff. And so we went in the house and, played Super Nintendo for a little while. My friend Ken came over, who lived on the next street over, the street that Damien used to live over, the next street over. And so we sat in there for a little while. And
is that Ken Watkins?
Ken Watkins, yes. Okay. And at this time, my stepfather was kicked out, and my mom had a boyfriend living with us, Dink. Mm-hmm. And he knocked on the door, the bedroom door, and was like, hey, got a phone call. So I went, took the phone call, and it was my Uncle Hubert. Mm-hmm. And I say my Uncle Hubert, is really my great-grand-Uncle Hubert. Like, my mom's uncle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's even more uncles further than that.
Right, know, like, yeah.
Uncle Hubert's ancient. Right. He's awesome. I love Uncle Hubert. And so he's wanting me to cut his grass. He's like, you going to come over and cut my grass? And I'm like, yeah, I'll be over in a minute, you know, however long it takes me and stuff. So I go back to my room and tell Damien, Dominique, and Ken, like, I'm like, hey, I got to go cut my uncle's yard. Y'all can come with me. You can stay here. You can go wherever. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to cut my uncle's yard.
Right.
That's what I'm going to go do. And so they're like, oh, yeah, we'll go with you. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, stop making out. Let's go.
Right.
Damon Dominique, they're just like making out in the room while me and Kim played Nintendo or whatever. And so we walk to my uncle's house, which my uncle lives in West Memphis. Mm-hmm. I have to walk to West Memphis from Lakeshore, but it's pretty much a straight shot from my house there. And it only takes like 20 minutes, maybe, to get there. Maybe 30. Depends on how slow Damon and Dominique walk.
Stop to make out.
Right, right. And so we get there and everything. And they stay outside, and I go in and talk to my uncle, and then me and my uncle go out the back door and go to the shed.
Where was your Uncle Hubert's house located?
Yeah, I could not tell you the address or the name of the street, but I could take you to the house.
Was it, landmarks?
It's right by the Boys Club and the Water Tower. The Boys Club.
Where's that in relation to the Walmart? I know where Walmart is.
It's straight. It's straight.
Straight, so near... Like, so from Lakeshore, like, if you walk
from, if you walk from Lakeshore to Walmart, my uncle is just that away. Like, here's the Water Tower and the Boys Club. Here's Walmart. Here's my uncle's house.
Okay. So
and here's a big street, right? The main street right here. I don't know what it's called.
Missouri, probably.
I think you're right. He doesn't live on it, but like there's a street that goes this way and then bam, that's his house right there. Like, I could see that street in Missouri from his backyard.
So
like,
you'd be west of Missouri.
There's his backyard, and then there's like businesses, and then that street.
Okay, so I know. So you'd be west of Missouri, which is a couple of mile or so west of the crime scene.
Right.
Which was over, there's Missouri, then 7th. And then it was east of there. So you're over by the Walmart side.
Yeah.
So
Walmart, Belvedere Apartments, because Dominique used to live in Belvedere Apartments.
Okay.
So we'd go over there and see her. Then her mom moved to Lakeshore.
Okay. So that was 20, maybe 30 minute walk down there. You get to your uncle's house. You said you go in and Dominique and Damien stay outside.
Correct.
Okay.
They stay outside. I go mow the backyard. And then I go to mow the front. I notice Damien and Dominique are gone, but Ken is still there. I'm like, dude, where'd Damien and Dominique go? Oh, they had to go let Damien's mom know that he's not at your house to come here to get him.
A payphone or something?
I guess. I mean, I didn't even care at the time. I didn't even question. I didn't miss a beat. I was like, all right, cool. And I just kept mowing the yard. You know, I just went and mowed the front yard, finished it. And once I was done with the yard, my Uncle Hubert paid me $10. And we left and stopped at Walmart on our way to my house, or back to the Lakeshore Trailer Park.
This is you and Ken now?
Me and Ken. Mm-hmm. And had $10. And so got changed for one. It was two fives. Got changed for one of the fives. And one of them, a dollar, like all the way changed into quarters.
Uh-huh.
Right? So we could like get a couple of sodas and play a couple of the video games. Because at the time, you could go to those Sam's Choice sodas or like a nickel each. So you can like, for a buck, you can play a couple of video games, get a couple of sodas.
Right.
You know, for a buck.
Right.
Right. And so we played video games, you know. And I remember this Asian kid just walked right up and, you know, at your elbow, at my elbow, just watching us play until we got through, waiting on his turn to play. Uh-huh. We didn't, I don't even think we even said a word to one another.
Uh-huh.
You know, I just remember him because the last Asian kid I saw was when I went to school in Memphis.
Uh-huh.
And he was my best friend that lived right down the street from me, this kid named Vincent. And his dad was in the Navy, and his mom was Vietnamese.
Uh-huh.
And his mom didn't speak any English.
Right.
So, but anyway, that was the last Asian kid I'd seen. I had not seen any Asian kid in Arkansas until this kid is right here next to me. I'm playing Street Fighter. So I remembered him.
Right.
I'm like, oh, it was kind of like Vincent.
Right.
Not to be weird or anything.
Right.
I miss Vincent, you know, my kid, my buddy, you know. And so we get through playing and finish walking to the trailer park, you know. And we come to Ken's house before mine. And so he just goes home, you know, and I keep going to my place.
Right.
You know, and I get there and I'm hanging out at my place for a little while. And Matt and Terry are in and out of the house. Like they don't. Other kids are in the house, like Sammy, Chris, you know, they're like in and out, Mike, you know, Terry's friends and stuff, in and out, running in and out of the house and stuff. And so after a little while, I go to Adam's house, which he lives all the way on the other side of the trailer park, but still in Lakeshore Trailer Park because he's got an Iron Maiden tape I want. Mm. Pyre Slave, you know, and I've got $9 left from mowing my uncle's lawn. I just spent a dollar. And I need to save $5 of it for the skating rink, you know, because it costs like $4.50 just to get in, you know, just to get in. So it's $5, you know.
Right.
But he's wanting to sell me the tape for $5,
right?
But I've only got $9. And I need $5. I can give him $4. So anyway, I get to his house and his mom is there. His dad is there. His sister is there, which I kind of had a crush on. She's an older girl, which I had a crush on for ever since I've known him. I can't even remember her name now, which is sad. And her boyfriend is there and everything. And I get kind of tongue-tied in front of her. So we end up going back to Adam's room where I could talk, you know?
Right.
And communicate and everything. And I talk him in to selling me the tape for $4 instead of $5 so I can keep the $5 for skating rink that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I buy the tape and I go home. And I get home and there's tuna casserole for dinner. I eat that. I watch, what is that show? Wonder Years is what I watched every night. Wonder Years, I'm watching it and I'm talking to Heather on the phone. I'm talking to, and at the time I have these other friends, well, Damon, he's friends with them too, but we met these girls at the skating rink, this girl named Holly, this girl named Jennifer, you know, and I kind of got a crush on Holly, which is, not my wife, Holly, now.
Right.
But a different Holly.
Yeah.
But I'm going out with Heather and stuff and everything. But we're all talking on the phone and stuff, like back and forth and whatever. And then but I go to bed when Wonder Years is over.
Uh-huh.
You know, I go to bed pretty early and put my Iron Maiden on and some Metallica or something. I don't even remember now what I had in the second tape deck, but I'm thinking it was Metallica. But it might not have been. It might have been something else. But what I do know is, every night I'd put a tape on, I had a dual cassette stereo, and I'd put a cassette on one side, push play, and then on the other side, I'd push pause and play.
Mm-hmm.
That way, when this cassette ended, the other one would start automatically, you know, just so I can have something to jam when I go to sleep.
Right.
But invariably, I always fall asleep before it's over with, you know. But my mom gets home from work sometime after I go to bed, 11-something or whenever, you know, it's 11-something, and so she'll come in and check on us. And so what she'll do is she'll go turn my stereo off. Like she won't hit stop. She'll just hit the power button. So when I get up in the morning, I can pretty much tell when mom got home.
By like, how far it went through the tape.
Right. I got halfway through the second tape, you know, right, or whatever, you know, yeah, before mom got home, you know. So
you had a pretty vivid memory of that night, and you kept trying to tell the police that's what was happening that night, and they just weren't having it.
Correct. They absolutely refused the truth.
Right, because they already had their truth, right?
Exactly. They had a believable story. Mm-hmm. And that's their quote.
Make sure you tune in to the second half of my interview with Jason Baldwin next week on Truth and Justice. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing and sound engineering by Shane Yoder. All music for the show was created, composed, and scored by PutThemInASong.com, who also mixed and mastered this episode. Our Season 7 logo was created by me with assistance from Zach Weaver and Shane Yoder. All of our font across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. I'd like to thank Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Charlena White, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Fiola, Edith Swanneck, and Jen Reese Incandela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels on Patreon that include access to behind-the-scenes videos of the tapings of our Friday follow-up episodes, ad-free versions of all of our episodes, Truth and Justice Army t-shirts and hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email, theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter at Truth Justice Pod. I personally can be found on social media at Bob Ruff Truth, and Mike can be found at Murb Gaming, MURRBGAMING. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.
You've seen the film. You know the game. Now, Jumanji just got real. Only at Chessington World of Adventures. Featuring Daredevil Dad, Mom on a mission, and the kids who can't wait to ride the world's first Jumanji roller coaster. An epic adventure awaits. World of Jumanji. Only at Chessington World of Adventures. Book this summer's must-do day out at Chessington.com.